From the heart of the greatest territory in wrestling history, Memphis, Tennessee, it's Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. I'm your co-host, Willie B. And as always, I'm joined by my tag team partner, the founder, promoter, and CEO of our great podcast, the Booker of the Stars, Mayor McCall.
Willie B., I don't mean to brag or boast, but the mayor's come through like hot butter on toast. We have a very, very special guest today. He's a wrestling legend known all over the world. Not everyone came to the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis, Tennessee and walked out with Jerry Lawler's unified title, but this man did. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, please welcome King Cobra.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, King.
Thanks, sir. I'm glad to be here, and thank you for having me.
Man, it's our honor to have you, sir. It's our honor to have you.
Definitely a really high honor. Got to spend some time with you, you know, before we did this. My wife and I got to have a little dinner with you and hang out with you and enjoyed that. And, you know, appreciate that time with you, King. Really, really enjoyed it, and I'm glad to have you on the show this morning.
Okay. So how you guys are doing, you know?
We are doing well. So, you and I met many years ago. We have a common friend, Mr. Bob Durden.
Yes.
So, yeah. So,
how's Bob doing?
He's actually doing better. You know, I don't know if you know, but he just finished up his last cancer treatment a couple weeks ago, and he is doing. He's actually doing much better. I actually talked to him on my way to come do this show. So I talked to him this morning, and he wants me, once we hang up, wants to make sure that you have his number so that you guys can get in touch and talk with each other. But, you know, years ago, he brought you to an event. I served in Iraq, and I was injured. And some of our listeners know, and I lost both legs. And you came to an event for me that the local VFW held for me, a fundraiser, back in 2005. And Bob knew that I was a huge, huge Memphis wrestling fan. And I just wanted to say from the bottom of my heart, I don't know if I ever got a chance to thank you, but thank you for showing up, and thank you for being there for me, King Cobra. It meant a lot.
But thank you for having me there, and thank you for your service.
Man, it was an honor to serve. It's an honor to serve. So, but I just want to get that out of the way, and like I said, Bob wants to definitely get in touch with you and talk with you after the show.
Okay, that'd be fine.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it doesn't get much bigger than that. If you're going to bring a Memphis wrestling legend to see a true hero, you bring King Cobra.
King Cobra, that's right.
That's how you get that done. You bring Mr. King Cobra himself.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to Bob. I ain't talked to him in a long time.
Yeah, he thinks highly of you. Thanks very highly of you.
Future, the feeling is mutual.
Good deal, good deal. Well, King, tell us a little bit about how you got in the wrestling business. What year did you start, you know, wrestling? How did you get into it? Who trained you? All the good stuff.
Well, you know, what most people don't know is you know, I list as being from Memphis, but I'm actually from, I was born and raised in Mississippi.
Okay, what part?
And Holmes County.
Okay, yeah.
A little town called Thornton, about 12 miles south of Chula, 38 miles south of Greenwood.
Yep.
And you come from a farming family, if I'm not mistaken, King.
Right.
The Mississippi Delta.
And one day I was, you know, my mom had a sister living in Memphis, and they was trying to get me to come up and for like a little vacation, and my mom agreed to let me come, and I came, and that was in 1963, and it was fascinating, you know, coming from a town that had one store, one post office, and one movie theater at one time, but it was just a storefront deal that had a movie screen in it, and coming to Memphis and seeing all the bright lights and stuff like that, and I had some cousins here that they took me around and showed me the town and took me to the fairground. I had never been to a fair before, and so that was fascinating, and they took me shopping, and last but not least, they took me to a wrestling match, and that was my first live match. I had seen matches on TV back in Mississippi, but I really said that was something that I wouldn't do because I thought it was so brutal and rough and cheating and all of that. And so I said I would never be a wrestler. But then this particular night, they took me, at the time, They was wrestling in at Ellis Auditorium.
Yes, yes.
And I had never seen that many. It wasn't that many people around where I lived, and going to that, you know, you get in there, and man, it was like thousands of people, and we were sitting on the floor, way in the back, and the wrestling with the bright lights and all, and boy, I was really fascinated with that. And I said, well, I'm gonna. That's what I want to do, man. All these people are cheering for you guys. So when I left, they would ask me, what do you think? And I said, boy, that's what I want to be, a wrestler. But at the time, I only weighed about 140. And, you know, they all kidded me. They said, boy, you can't be no wrestler. They're going to be in a break you in half. So the next day, we were sitting around at my cousin's house, and I kept saying that, and their parent was telling me, you can't be no wrestler. And I've always been the kind of guy, even back in Mississippi, you know, if you tell me I couldn't do something, I'm determined to do it, you know.
It's all the motivation you need.
Yes. So I started doing, you know, I started then, and while I was here, my parents' house burned. So at that time, I just stayed on up here with my cousins, and I got me a little job. Then I found out about, there was a magazine store down on Main Street, and I found out about that, and I went out there and was just looking at some magazines and saw some muscle building, bodybuilding stuff, and I got that, and I eventually bought me a set of weights, and I kept training, and feeling like I was getting nowhere fast, but I was, you know, I was putting on a few pounds. But along with that, I saw a wrestling magazine, so when I looked at that, it was called Ring Magazine. So that's kind of, you know, got me all excited. I started buying them when they would come out monthly, and I would buy one every month, and just kept trying to be a wrestler. And I would start going to the wrestling match. I had no time, my way around in Memphis, so I could go down and go to Ellis Auditorium every Monday night. And then I found out you could get a reserved seat. I found a seat down there that I liked, and nobody had it reserved, and I started reserving that. That was the ticket seller at that time was a lady named Joanne Phillip, which was Treacherous Phillip. I found out later that was Treacherous Phillip's sister. And so I would pick my ticket up every Monday, and I would be there every single Monday. Never missed a Monday. And when I wouldn't be at work, I would catch it on, you know, catch wrestling on TV on Saturday and stuff like that. And I just kept working, and I would try to get to see the guys. And I remember I was standing at the back door, and I remember Sailor Thomas came in to town, and I got a chance to talk to him. There was a guy, I think it was Titus Conway's, no, Luther Lindsay came, and I got to meet him. And I was working at Poncho's restaurant, and one Saturday, Alex Perez, and I didn't know who the other guy was, came. And I stood out front after I got through doing what I was doing. It was a slow day, and when he was leaving, I talked to him, and he probably thought I was kidding, but he didn't snap me up or anything. He was one of the bad guys. And he talked to me about 5 minutes and just told me, that I was really too small, but don't let that stop me. Keep working out, keep training, and get bigger and stronger, and you can be whatever you want to be. And so I took his advice, and I never met him again, never talked to him again. And I just kept doing that. And then I went in the military. And
what branch?
Army.
Army, all right. Fellow soldier, yeah. Same here.
Yeah. And that was, thank you. And that was in 68. And I had a job. I was working at a welding. A lady told me to go to welding school, and I did that. And then I got a job at a welding company, and I was the supervisor of a foreman of the welding department or whatever. And when I went in the military, but when I was discharged, I came back and went to the same job. And then while I was in the military, I worked out and trained and all that kind of stuff. I kept doing that, and I had gotten a little bigger. I got got up to probably 175 by that time. So I started back on my job, and I was married at the time when I went in, and I was married when I came back. So my wife wanted to go to the wrestling match one night, and I said, okay, we'll go. I didn't want to go, but then she kept wanting to go. I said, okay, we'll go. So we would go to the wrestling match, and so I'm sitting up there in the bleachers kind of half pissed because I really didn't want to go. And a guy next to me had a program, and when I looked up at his program and looked down, and I saw a thing said, so you want to be a wrestler and come to the training school. And boy, and I jumped up then and ran downstairs and bought me a program and found that little ad in the back of it, and it was at 2577 Broad Avenue. And so Tuesday after work, I went there, and this old guy came out, talked to me, and said, you want to be a wrestler? And he told me how much it was. It was maybe like, I don't remember how much the entire thing was, but, you know, $25 or something like that, weekly or something, that a monthly, whatever the fee was, and I agreed to come. And didn't know anything about him, but he told me who he was, he introduced himself, but it was Al Spider Galento, but I had never heard of him.
Oh, wow.
Because I was in Mississippi when they was doing all this stuff up here in Memphis. But then when I went back and started telling other people about me, and they said, yeah, man, that's Al Galento. Him and his brother Mario, man, they was bad dudes. And blah, 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 blah. And
yeah, we've talked about Mario many times on this show.
Yep. And Al was Olympic. He was on the American Olympic team back in his day.
Olympic wrestler?
And he, yeah.
Oh, wow. So he's a legit shooter.
Yes. So I would listen to him. He would tell me stuff. And, you know, I was the smallest guy in the class. We had a guy that weighed 320, 245, 280. But I was really strong because I had been working out for 2 or 3 years. There was, you know, weights, and I was strong, but I was small. But then I had gone, you know, every wrestling match since 63 until I went in the military. And then when I come back, I started back to going to wrestling match. So I was watching, see how the guy was doing this, and I'm an easy learner. So we would, and Al would just get you in the ring and put you in there, and you get down on all fours, and that's where you wrestle from. And I was pretty good at that. Everybody in the school would go with this guy today, and somebody else tomorrow. And I was never pinned because I was really, really, you know, trying to put forth the effort. And Billy Wicks, he was with the sheriff department at the time. I didn't know anything about him either because I was in Mississippi when he in Monroe was doing that thing. So he came down to work out with me, and I brought him down to work out with me. And I said, well, okay. Billy said, yeah, he's a scrapper. So he started calling me a wiry because I wouldn't quit, you know. And you couldn't, I guess I was so small, they couldn't get a really good hold on me and hold me down. So I could beat everybody in the class. So I could just line them up. So, okay, they would plot. Norvell also, Norvell came in later, and we all went through the thing together. And Norvell and Sam McKay and John Patterson, Norvell was a lot bigger and stronger than me, but he couldn't hold me. And Sam McKay was bigger than both of us together. And a guy out of Clarksville named John Patterson, he was about 320. But they would say, okay, we're going to start you off with this guy, and then he's going to get you, then Norville's going to get you, then I'm going to get you, then what you get by me, then John got you. And I would just line them up, be five or six of them. And we'd go in the ring and shoot for, yeah, it wouldn't take me but 2 or 3 minutes to get one. And then 3 or 4 minutes to get the next one, 3 or 4, and I would just beat everybody in the class. And they would always just try to, it was a lot of fun and games, you know, we just shooting. But then, so when we got started, see, there was a guy came to the matches. I didn't know him at the time, but Al had trained him, and he come by a few times to watch us, and never saw him anymore. Then one day, this was after about a year or so, there was a guy coming in from Ring Magazine, and he was supposed to be doing some writing and stuff. So he was there the whole week, and he would be talking to Al all the time, and they would just be talking, but we'd be out there training and stuff. And we were training on all fours all week, but then on Sunday, we just got out there and played and pretend we was wrestling, you know. So there was this guy come in, and he introduced himself to us, and Al had trained him. His name was Bo Taylor. So with that, Bo Taylor and a guy named YB Deaton was running a town called Park in Arkansas, and they was wanting some wrestlers. So, and the guy from Ring Magazine was there also during that time. And so he introduced everybody, and he told them that, like, Norvell and I was his best two students. And so they got around to, they wanted us to wrestle for them. And so we said, okay, we would do that. And they was wrestling already in Hughes, Arkansas, for a guy named Aubrey Griffith. Aubrey is still alive. He's still there in touch. He lives in West Memphis now. He was a promoter. And found out later, you know, that Aubrey gave Jerry Lawler his first match.
That's right, because the King had been working the radio and had wanted to go over there to West Memphis. He had wanted to get in. I believe I remember correctly that Fargo had kind of brushed him off and wouldn't let him wrestle Memphis, and he goes over to a, quote, outlaw show for over in West Memphis, and that's how he got his start. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And he had never wrestled before, but he told him he had done a little wrestling down in Florida.
Yeah.
And when he was about to get caught up in the lie, he's like, well, oh, I got this radio show. I can plug the show. Well, come on, kid.
Right. That's true. So they was, so Aubrey was running Hughes, Arkansas. So Bo Taylor talked to us and wanted us to come over and wrestle. So we said, okay. Then we said we would come over, and they was wrestling. The match was supposed to be in Park in Arkansas. But so we didn't know anything about the business. So we get up there, because Al would not tell you anything about the business. You know, he'd find out that from the promoter. So we did our thing. We kept training. And the guy from Ring Magazine was still there. So when everybody left except John and I, so we talked to Al. We asked Al a lot of questions, and Al just would tell you, well, you know, they'll tell you who you got to wrestle and stuff like that when you get there, stuff like that. Okay, so we left, and Bo Taylor came back by and told us that, you know, for us to come down, we could come down and watch the match in Hughes first, because it was our first match, and we'd see how it go. He told us to come to the back door, and they would let us in. So we said, okay. So we left, you know, John and I was talking, saying, man, these guys are trying to screw us, you know. I think they, I said, I tell you what, we're going to go down there Saturday night, but he told us to come to the back door, but we're not going to go to the back door. We're going to go in the front and buy a ticket and go in like everybody else, and don't let them know that we're there, because they probably going to try to trick us and like they ain't doing this, and it's not real and stuff, but maybe real, but they don't want us to know. So we're going to go in the front door. We're not going to go to the back door. It's okay. So we went down there, and sure enough, we bought tickets and went in. We sat way in, way, time we went in the door, it was an old movie theater. And the time we stepped in the arena part, we sat on the farthest row from the ring so they wouldn't see us. And so we sat there, and they were working with a guy, one guy. He and I got to be friends later. His name was Larry Latham. Not the Larry Latham with the, no, not that Larry Latham. There's a guy, he lives in South Haven now, but his name was Larry Latham. And he was going with Aubrey Griffith's daughter. But anyway, they wrestled that night, and then they juiced him at the end, and he was bleeding guy. And we were sitting there looking at each other like, man, he bit that door. So
he did a hard way.
He went back to the dressing room. Right. We thought it was, because we didn't know. So we go down to the ring right there, and he was laying there. kind of halfway on the rope trying to get up, and blood was running out. He said, man, we just turned around here and walked on back out and got in our car and came on back. And then we said, then, you know, that's when we start analyzing. Man, you know, they didn't know we was there. That's why they did that. But see, now Tuesday night, we got to wrestle them in Park in Arkansas. But see, now, after that, if we had gone in the back like they said, they wouldn't have done that. They didn't want us to know how good they was or how bad they was. Man, they going to try to, okay, they're trying to trick us. So that's why they didn't know we were there. So we get on back to the arena, and that was on Saturday night. Sunday, we're in the building, and we're at a workout, and Bo Taylor walked in. So he walked in, so we get ready now because we think he's going to jump us or something. So we standing there watching him, and we talk. He said, hey, I thought y'all was coming down last night. He said, no, I didn't get out working time. Just put it like that. He said, okay. And so we're still on for Tuesday. We said, yeah. So he left. And when he left, it got kind of quiet now. And we went on up to the office and talked to Al. Said, Al, okay, is wrestling real or what? And Al would tell you, like, well, you take the wrestler with the golden touch. And he caught my arm, and I could barely feel him touch my arm. The best wrestler has a golden touch. And that's all he said. Okay, what the hell is that? Okay, so we walk around, and then we said, I don't know, man. I don't know either. We don't know. So we was going to work with them that Tuesday night. So we studied about it and talked about what we was going to do. And so then we go to the matches. We go to Park in Arkansas. And it was at a movie theater also, an old shut-down movie theater, and there's a stage up there, and there's a piece of plywood right there, kind of nailed against the wall on our side, and so we're sitting there talking, and by this time, the Ring magazine reporter came in, and I said, oh, you came over? He said, yeah. I said, hey, I'm coming with you. No, I said, where they at? He said, Alan, come. I said, well, what are you doing here? He said, I'm finishing up my article. I said, how are you finishing up without Al? He said, I didn't come to Memphis to write about Al. I came to Memphis to write about you. I said, huh? He said, that's what it was about. Al told me that you was going to be one of his greatest students. He said, no. He said, yeah, really? I said, so you're writing about me. I said, but you've been here all week, but you're just talking to Al. He said, yep. Al, give me the true facts. I said, okay. So we sat there and we were thinking, and so when I go in, well, let me back up. Back at the school, Al used to call me the snake. He said, I was long and lanky and skinny, and when he told one day he was around me, he just hit the mat, bam. He said, all right, we're going to call him the snake. And everybody started calling me the snake. So I said, I don't really like a snake, so. I came home in a couple of days and looked in the encyclopedia to find out what was the baddest snake out there, and I saw this picture of this King Cobra.
King Cobra.
Yeah. And I say, that's what I want to be. They're going to call me the snake. I want to be the King Cobra. So when I went back to school, I told the guys, hey, don't y'all call me the snake. Call me the King Cobra. So it stuck. Everybody started calling me the King Cobra. So that night, I'm sitting there, got my wrestling boots on and stuff and all this, and this piece of plywood kind of slid over, and it was Bo Taylor coming through over there to the outside. So I jump up and get in a fighting stance because I can beat the hell out of this guy. I know I can beat him because, hell, I'm going to beat everybody in school. I can beat him. Shit, I jump up ready to fight. And then he didn't see it, though, but he come on in and said, all right. And so by the time he came in, then the promoter came in the door. And so I'm ready to fight, but I don't say anything, but he make a wrong move, he's going to be knocked out right there. So the promoter said, okay, so you guys are going. So back then, when they book a match, they would only book, they would use, like, six guys. So main event would be a tag, the semifinal would be a single match with two out of three, and the first match would be two people out of the tag, out of the main event, would go out in a 15-minute opener, and then the other two people would work a 2 out of 3 fall for the semifinal. Then the main event, the two that worked in the first match would team up with the two that hadn't worked, and we have a tag match. So that's the way it was set it up. So the promoter came in and said, "Okay, so what you guys gonna do?" And Bo Taylor said, "I'll open up with him," which was me. And so he said, "Okay, so what y'all gonna do?" And Bo said, He said, "Well," he said, "I'll open up with him." He said, "We'll set up something in the ring that." So he said, "Who's going over?" He said, "I'll let him take it." So I'm just standing there looking and listening, like things going through my mind, okay. So then when both of we called it in the ring, I said, okay. So then he'd climb back through that hole and go back over to the other side. And I tell my partner, I said, you hit him? Somebody let me go. Man, I beat that MF to death. Shit, he ain't got to let me. What are you talking about? I don't know. I said, what do you think? I don't know. You think it's a work or what? I don't know. I said, well, over there on Sunday, we was forewarming everybody as hard as you can, So, hey, I can take a punch, so I'm going to let him throw the first punch. And if he don't hurt me, then I'm not going to hurt him. Okay. So I go in the ring still ain't smart. Then first punch was a working punch, and we worked the match, and boom, and we went over. So I said, okay, that's cool. So then after that night, then we go back and we talk. And then I found out that, matches was set up like that. Again, I didn't want to wrestle no more. Because I ain't going to let nobody beat me because I've been over here to school for a year and a half and had never been pinned. I ain't going to just let somebody pin me. But then I changed my mind. Glad I did because I thought I was bad, but there's some badasses out there, But so that's how my stuff got started. But then John Patterson didn't make it, but Norville and I was partners and buddies, at that time. And so we was probably the best two students over there. While we was there, Tommy Gilbert came out and worked with us and people like that. Some of the former guys that Al had worked with over the years and trained and stuff. Tommy came over and worked out with us a few times. Billy Weeks came over and worked out with us, and he was tough. And the thing about it, with those guys, they couldn't hold me down. Like, they couldn't pin me. But Al, on the way, 212, and these other guys were, 240, 280, 300. Al, being on the Olympic team, he would get on you like he's going to pin you. And he would not use his hands on you at all, and you couldn't get up.
Yeah, there is a, and you know this, there is a level of grappling. you already, with your regular, wrestlers, Olympic-style wrestlers, Greco-Roman, freestyle, those guys are just incredible athletes. But then you get someone that was on the Olympic team or even Olympic alternate, and that's an elite level of grappling that goes to show you that he didn't even have to use his hands. He probably just used his legs or waist and body control. That's a whole other level of humiliation, because those men are just they are the best in the world.
Right. He would keep his hands open and he would block you and stuff. He'd lay on you. First of all, he lay on you, and the way he wasn't as big as the biggest guy. The biggest guy in the gym outweighed him by 110 pounds.
Size doesn't matter when you have that strength.
And he would suffocate you. He's laying on you and you can't hardly breathe. And the thing on that, when he lay on you, the only thing that's on the mat is his toes, because he stretches legs out and kind of like breathes across your chest. And then when you try to move, everywhere you try to move, he take his elbow and block it.
Yep.
And push that one out the way and block. But he never would put his hand on you. So he taught me a lot, and he's the one that got me in the business, and I'm glad he did, And then, like I said, when I found out that I had to just let somebody beat me, no, I didn't want to go with that. But then laid off the line and said, shit, I'm glad I did change my mind, because shit.
Well, learning, but it sounds like learning from a real shooter like Galinta, that it showed you exactly, you know, what can happen if you don't know how to protect yourself in the ring. If you get someone that goes right in business for themselves or doesn't know what they're, you know, just wants to get wild, and you have to learn, and you realize, wow, okay, this is actually teaching me a lot.
Yep. And I would, he would get me to work with me a lot, you know, saying, hey, even though it is what it is, you still can find some people that don't want to go along with it, and if you can't take care of yourself, the promoter can't protect you.
That's right.
You're out there in the ring, and that you know, the guy just, and there's so many people, I just look at them, you know, they're trying to get in the business, and everybody now, buddies training, buddies, and stuff like that, and they're just taking whatever's out there. But back in those days, it was the cream of the crop, you know, you had to be damn good to make it.
Yes.
But now anybody can make it. One guy go out and wrestle tonight and come back tomorrow night, he'd bring his buddy with him. And the next night his buddy's wrestling. But so, you know, during that time, Norville and I was the only two black in this area that was wrestling in the outlaw stuff. So they kept us busy every night. You know, we would have some place to go and you know, we were wrestling two or three nights in Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, and some in Tennessee, and Arkansas, Mississippi. You know, like that, it was just different. They call them outlaw promoters, but they kept us going because they needed black guys on.
Yeah, on let me ask about that. About you and him being the only two black wrestlers back then. Did you have quite the following? Did you have a lot of black fan base would come just to see you two?
Yes, because you know, not bragging anything, but
no, it's not bragging if it's true.
Yeah, but because we trained together, we knew each other, and we lived here in Memphis together, and we were buddies. I mean, when we would go to these places and wrestle, they would have us, maybe like, they started out putting us on the first match, but we quickly went to the semifinals, and then when we got to the semifinals, because we didn't care, we took care of each other, the guys, the main event people, got to where they wouldn't follow us.
Gotcha.
They couldn't follow us. We would go out there, and we broke into business together, and we trained together, so we just hit them. And I guess,
well, I mean, sometimes, and for a lot of you know this, but a lot of wrestling fans don't remember that being first on the card, especially in the territory days, was quite the honor, because you're the one that had to open the show. You're the opening act, right? You're the one that has to capture the attention and get the fans' interest. So to be chosen to be the opening act or opening match was a big deal. Just yes. As much as it was, you know, being the main, in many ways being the main event.
Right. And see, we got so good at what we were doing till the guy would hate to follow us in the main event, because the people would be so, hell, it'd be just so enthused on that. And
hard act to follow.
It takes a lot of psychology, ring psychology or something, whatever they call it, but to know what to do and when to do and why to do it. And for the most part, some of you guys was backyard trained, and they didn't know what they were doing or why they should do it, and they just couldn't follow it. Just like I tell young guys now, hey, when you're in the dressing room, and new breed of people came along. Back in the day, you know, they couldn't have made it in wrestling because they didn't allow you to be in there if you didn't know what you was doing. And I tell guys, the guys would come in and want to sit and talk about what they did last night and how drunk they got and this, that, and the other, da-da-da. Sit there in the corner and say, that match, come on, then they want to go out in the ring and wrestle. Okay, so my advice to everybody like that is, I would always watch every match because I was trying to see who was doing what and how they was doing and why they was doing and why they shouldn't do it and why they should have done it. And so you go out, you know, if I was in a match right now and I went out and they was high flying and doing this and doing that, when I go out, I'm not going to try to do that because it'll ruin the match because I have to get so high to get the people's attention.
Right.
So what I would do is, you know, you get a hold and work a hold and work a hold, work the hair, work the arm, work something, and just let the heels just keep getting it and working it, keep getting it and working it, and deal. And then you sell the people back down from that high-flying match that they just saw, and then they get down and they get hit. But then nobody get hit anymore.
If everything's a high spot, then nothing's a high spot.
Right. And so you bring them back down, sell them down, and then you can work until your match. You know, when we was working like that, we had people always trying to get in the ring. I want to throw something. But right now, hell, everybody just kind of like the part of the match. They just join in and stuff, you know. It doesn't make sense.
That incredible, you know, story about the, you know, the beginnings and the origin of, you know, King Cobra. Tell us about, how did you hook up with, like, Jarrett, the CWA, the Memphis territory? How did that unfold? How did that come about?
Okay, so I had a job. I was shop manager for Republic Services. Anyway, and I just had been there forever, a little like since I was born. But so I was just wrestling part-time. So Norvell was working, we was in any little small towns, and Sputnik was in here, and they, Norvell, I don't know exactly how he got with Sputnik, but he came back one day and told me that they wanted him to team up with Sputnik Monroe. Sputnik saw him and liked him or whatever, saw him somewhere in some of the town. And, well, what should I do? So, he didn't have a good job, so he was working. At the time, he was working with a construction company. They was building the Cook Convention Center, changing from Ellis Auditorium and doing the Cook Convention Center. So this other friend of ours that started out with us saying that, we told him, so, well, my man, you don't have a permanent job. Yours is just like that. So you should go ahead and try it. So my man, he branched off from us and he started going with Sputnik. So, hey, he made it. So there was a guy named Chuck Malone that used to be the referee over there with us. He was real small. He was smaller than me. He had got in with Jarrett and them, and he was refereeing some. And one Saturday morning, I had a job. I just stayed busy. I had a job, but then I had my own business. I built doors and wonder guards and stuff like that. So, you know, I was manufacturing those and selling them. That's when the raw iron doors thing got popular. So I was doing that. And so my phone rang on Saturday morning about 10 o'clock, 10:15 maybe. And it was Chuck Malone. He said, hey, man, what are you doing? I told him, well, I'm back in my shop building some doors. He said, hey, they want you to come down. They need you to come down to the TV station. So I say, yeah, right. He said, no, I'm not lying. They want you to come to the TV station. They want to use you. I said, come on, man, cut that shit.
Cut that shit out, so he kept insisting.
So I said, okay, but now I know this is real. You know, they don't know nothing about me. But he had told them they needed somebody, and so I said, okay. So I go to the house and I get ready right quick, get my stuff, and I tell my wife where I was going, and I say, let the kids come in and watch TV because I might be on TV this morning. And so she said, okay. So I left and went out to the TV station. I got there. I sat in my truck about 5 minutes. Man, I mean, I ain't going up in there. Look out, going like a fool. I said, well, okay. I finally said, okay, I'm going in. So I cut the truck off, but I wouldn't take my bag in. And
to let everybody know, this was Channel 5 Studios on Union Avenue, correct?
Correct. So I said, so I go in. I go in through the front door, and they directed me how to get back in the back where I was supposed to be. And so when I go back through that other door back there, the first person I see was Jerry Lawler. And he said, can I help you? I said, yeah. I said, Chuck Malone called me. He said, you can't go over? I said, yeah. He said, where's your stuff? I said, it's not in my car. He said, well, get it, because we need you right quick. So now I said, okay. So now they want to get everybody together right there in front of the door. So when I walk in, they're going to say, what the shit are you doing here? Who are you? No, that kind of stuff. So I said, okay. So I went back to the car and got it. Came back in. By the time I come back in, then Jared was standing there, and somebody else was standing there. And so they showed me where to go and dress. They said, you get dressed, because we need you in this next match. So I was like, okay. So I went and got my stuff and put everything on. They came in, talked to me. Chuck came by and said, hey, I'm glad you made it, man. He said, okay, get out and do your thing. I said, okay, but I'm still kind of leery. So when I go out there and, I just went out and took over the match as much as, because most of the guys that you would see in that situation, the job was, you know, it would be just letting the other guy dominate. But I didn't let him dominate. I just got him, and, you know, he didn't call anything, but I just locked up and maybe arm dragged him, bam, he got him, came right back, and hip tossed him, bam, then arm dragged again, hanging onto the arm, and then so we worked a little stuff, and then actually went over. I don't even remember who it was, but then when the match was over and I come back through the door there, then the first person I see was Lawler. And he said, hey, he said, hey, you did good. He said, can you come back next week? I said, yeah. He said, I want you wrestle me next week. Damn.
Okay.
So, but then the next week I came back, and because I didn't know Rocky Johnson at the time, but the next week I came back, when I came in, Rocky Johnson was sitting there.
And Soul Man.
Yeah, I know Soul Man.
Yep. I said, well, I know him. I've seen him before because he's the one that won the belt from Lawler. So I just come on in and speak and go over there and sit and start putting my stuff on. And after about 5 minutes, Rocky get up and said, let me go over here and introduce myself to this young man. So he came over and said, hey, how you doing? We talked. And he got me what I doing after the show, and I told him. And he said, you want to get a bite to eat? So, you know, I said, okay, I'll do that. So Rocky and I hit it off, and we just used to hang together. When he'd come to town, you know, he and I would always end up together because he would fly in and didn't have a way to get around. So I was just honored to be going around with him. And so we would always go to the gym, and he showed me how to work out, and I started working out hard with him. And then later, Bill Dundee, and Rocky would ride with Dundee to here, and maybe Rocky was in Jonesboro that night, and Dundee might be in Helena or something. So
you started wrestling full time with the CWA, correct?
No, I don't ever wrestle full time for anybody.
Okay.
That's why I never made it really, really big. And what I mean by that is, I could have been with WWE if I had wanted to and prepared for it, you know, because I just stayed part-time all the time. I would wrestle and be at work the next day. And I never would make the other end for them, which is, you know, Louisville and Evansville, because I couldn't be at work the next day.
And let's spell that out for the fans, too, what King Cobra's talking about trying to work a regular job, be good, be successful at it, and, you know, work for the CWA, the Memphis Territory. Mondays were Memphis. Tuesdays were Louisville. Wednesdays were Evansville. Thursdays, either Nashville or Lexington. Friday, probably Tupelo. Saturday morning was TV. Then Saturday night was either Nashville or Jonesboro. So it would have been pretty much impossible for you to work that full-time job and travel with the territory, correct?
Correct. So I would just do, and then, so Rock was in here maybe 5-6 months, but then so he left, and the day that he left, I still hadn't made. I was just doing TV, and I asked him about stuff like that one day, and me and Law was talking, and he just said, well, you know, it's hard to do stuff with you because you can't make the whole territory. You can't make the, they call it the loop. You can't make the loop. So I understood that. So okay, because then, the day that Rock was leaving, Rock told Jerry, okay, do me a favor. And he said, what's that? He said, book over at the Coliseum. And they said, okay. So 2 weeks after he was gone, there was something at the Coliseum, and we had to move to the Cook Convention Center at the time, which was the old Edwards Auditorium, for that Monday night. And they did that. And they booked me, and my first match in the arena for them was Flyboy Frazier.
Ah, big man.
Which was a squash, you know. But then my biggest my biggest honor or compliment during that stretch when I first started, it was at Channel 13, but we had moved to Channel 5. That the next week we was at Channel 5. They changed network. And one day they was in there talking, and Ed Marlin said, he was talking to some of the younger guys, but some of the older guys now, he says that everybody we bring in the territory, we book them against Cobra first. And you can't have a good match with Cobra because he know how to put you over, he know how to do this, he know how to do that. And everything he does is right on time. Says if you can't have a good match with him, we just write him off on his first day in. If he come in here and work against Cobra and can't have a good match, he ain't what we're looking for. And so we would do that. And I worked with him. I never worked with the Moondog.
Speaking of you, the Rocksteady crew with Ira Reese, tell us about Ira and what's going on, whatever happened to Ira.
Well, Ira, okay, I met Ira back when Ira came looking for a job. I hired Ira, and he's the best hire I ever hired. But anyway, so he was working under me at the public services. And he was trying, before that, he was trying to wrestle. He was going down Florida fucking trip, but it was just like me, just part-time, just whatever he could get and stuff like that. And then when he realized that wrestling wasn't going to pay for him and his family, so then he just kind of started looking for a job. And he came to me looking for a job, so I hired him. And I just told him, hey, you got to be at work every day. You got to be at work on time every day. You can't be laying out. You can't be going out of town to wrestle and not coming back the next day, stuff like that. So he said, okay, and I told him, don't make me regret this, and he didn't. He was the best employee I ever had. So he's still around. When I retired from Republic Service, they had did away with my position, which was manager. Back in the day, it was BFI, then it was merged with Allied Waste. And during the Allied Ways days, they changed it to where they changed managers and things, and you couldn't, they thought, put them in the partner. But then I was such a valuable employee with them. I knew everything about the business, and I know more than most people could imagine. So they never messed with my position. My position stayed, I was going to be shop manager as long as I'm there. Because if I'm not going to be shop manager, I'm not going to, I would step down, but I didn't say that, but that was in my mind. That's what I would have done, because at that time, my business was going good that I owned, and I really didn't need the money, So, but I just loved helping people and doing what I was trained to do, and so I stayed on there. And when I left, I told him, okay, I was the next man to fill my shoes, you know what I know, because I taught him everything. And so they made him, they couldn't make him manager because they were changing the department, so he wouldn't be a manager, but he is the head guy in that department, and he's still there now. I talk to him all the time now. But back before we were saying, I never worked for anybody full time. I was always part time. I would wrestle tonight and come back like that. So I was saying on the announcement they would say from Memphis, but then I went down to my hometown one day, and I was coming back, and there was wrestling in Greenwood at a building. This is called the Arena, and there was a guy named George Calkin, George and Gil Calkin. That's Gil is his son, and those guys was out of Oklahoma. So I stopped there and went to the door and talked to Mr. Calkin and told him that I wanted to wrestle, and could I wrestle? He said, well, he used these guys out of Oklahoma. If I wanted to wrestle, I had to, contact people in Oklahoma. But I never did because I know that was too far, so I didn't. And so I came back and was still doing stuff in Memphis. Then Frankie Kane got the book down there for George, and he was meeting some people. And one Saturday, I went down there. They were doing TV in Greenwood, and I was still small, And he looked at me and said, okay, we'll use you, but you know, okay, we'll use you. So I did a TV match for them. And I was, like I said, I was small. I was weighed in at probably about 180. And, but hell, the match turned out to be, I guess, probably one of the better matches on the TV show that day. Then, when I did that, because it's only 26 miles from where I was born and stuff, so I said I'm from Mississippi, Chula, Mississippi. So, and back in those days, you know, especially with the black people, you know, not out in the public like everybody else, when they see that, everybody just fell in love with me because that's the hometown. Man, he's from Chula, he's right over there. You know, and so like that. So then I got real popular quick, you know.
That's King Cobra.
And started drawing. Yes. And then they started drawing and stuff. And I started working. Then Porkchop Cash, I met him up here. But then he had come in through the Oklahoma bunch and he was working. And so Porkchop and I was probably two of the top guys right there at the time. There was Tom Schaff that was in there. He was above me, but my matches would always be better because I was more exciting and the people were more behind me than them. And they teamed Porkchop and I up, okay, in Greenville. I wrestled in Greenville and I won the Greenville City Champ and then I won the Mississippi Championship out in Jackson. But I would drive down every day and come back. I could get back to Memphis. I'd leave down there like maybe 10 o'clock at night and I'd drive back to Memphis. And I kept doing that. So then they teamed Porkchop and I up and we were successful because we were two top black guys in that area and black people just, you know, we had matches like in Cleveland, hell, they had to turn away people. People like to start beating on the door because they couldn't get in. Sold out. It was just like that. So, come that Saturday on TV, Chop and I was up there talking, and they were going to try and chop heels, so Chop was up there talking about, you know, let me tell you like this. He's riding on my wagon. And no, don't get me wrong, I don't care about him riding on the wagon, but just don't drag your feet. So, I look at Chop, and then I said, what do you mean by that? And then he slapped me. You know what I mean, pow. And then we have a little pool party right there. So now we don't want to, they won't let us fight right there. So we're supposed to be having a match next week. But then during that time, George Coughlin was talking to Bill Watts. Bill Watts had a suit against Leroy McGregor out of Oklahoma. And so Watts took over the Oklahoma territory. And he merged back in with George in Mississippi. So they didn't have matches next week. They let everybody go except Porkchop and I. So Watch said he would keep us, you know, they had heard about me and they knew Porkchop. So he kept us and so August the 17th was the first time we were supposed to be going back in there. And so that August 17th was in Greenwood, so I was booked. And I was the Mississippi champion at the time, and so they wanted me to drop the strap that Saturday night to Mike George. So these guys don't know me. I don't know them. You know, I'm new in this game. So I walk in, and they show me what dressing room, babyface dressing room. So I go in there, so I'm getting dressed, and then Grizzly Smith was doing all the stuff at that time because he had been through when we was in Mississippi when I was working for Joy.
So Grizzly Smith, who for Mid-South, and he would book JYD those days, right?
Yes, but this was the 17th was supposed to, okay, on the 17th, JYD wasn't there that night.
Okay.
But JYD and I started at the same time. On the 17th, I was booked in Shreveport, and Dog was booked in Shreveport to come in Shreveport. But this was maybe like the 14th or the 13th or something. So I'm there, and I don't know who they had as the main event, but then they had me on in the opening match. So I goes out and And the people down there, they loved me. So they was like, man, standing ovation and stuff. It's King Cobra, King Cobra. So I go out and wrestle the first match, and I come back in. When I come back in, Buck Roblin was the booker. So Buck came and told me that Charlie Cook had hurt his leg the night before and want to know would I go back, would I take his place in the third match. No, semifinal. Yeah. There was two more matches after that match. Want me to know where I'd go back and wrestle Pork Chop in that match. And so I said, yeah, I do. So, bell rang. But then what they didn't realize, Pork Chop and I had just worked an angle that everybody wanted to see, but we never got to do the match because they, at that time, they stopped everything and brought in the guys from Oklahoma. So all the people that was in Greenwood would Chop slapped me 3-4 weeks ago. And the people never got to see the match, but they know it was a fight. It was, brewing between us. So when the bell rang, Pork Chop goes to the ring. Then I go to the ring, and when I come out, then the crowd just went wild because that's the match they had been waiting on 4 weeks ago. And man, and we tore the house down. And when I beat Pork Chop. And when we go back to the dressing room, about a third of the people left. And everybody was saying, well, where they going? Because the people thought that was the main event. So Buck Roberts standing back there smiling, and he said, hey, now I wasn't booked in Jackson, Buck, can you make Jackson tomorrow? I said, yeah. And by that time, George Calkins walking up. George Calkins, I think he thought they was trying to steal me from them or something. George said, hey, he can't go because they wanted me in Jackson that Saturday night and Monroe that Sunday night. They were just gonna forget about Charlie Cook. And George was saying, no, he gotta have a job, he gotta go to work, and they said, we'll get him out of there in time to go to work, we'll get him out of there. And so then in Jackson, and I went to Jackson that Saturday, and Bill Watson, and then he came and said, yeah, I heard you a good hand to have around. I said, well, I'll do what I do. And he said, okay, welcome aboard. So I would drive to Greenwood, and I would drive to Jackson and Cleveland, and then I would drive to Shreveport and Monroe. Then one day, I was at the thing, and they handed me my booking sheet because I could drive back to my place, and I was booked that Friday in Houma, Louisiana. And I told Buck, I said, hey, I can't go down that place. That's out of New Orleans. He said, don't they have an airport in Memphis? I said, yeah. He said, you afraid of flying? I said, no. He said, all right. I said, you telling me to fly? He said, yeah. Shit, it was flying me everywhere.
so that's how it started, huh? You were working your main job in Memphis and flying around the country.
Yeah, guys at work, one of my guys I would let them know, pick me up at the airport, and it was everybody would say, "Boy, that Kenny Coburn, that Jimmy Kimmel, he coming to work every day on 747."
Yeah, I remember you and I joking around about that. King, you're one of these guests, man. We could sit here and talk to you for 3-4 hours, probably 2 weeks, and not cover everything. So I want to fast forward a little bit, and there's a couple more things I want to definitely get in and talk to you about.
Okay.
Fast forward to 1989. The USWA is just getting started. You know, for those that didn't know, Jerry Jarrett, CWA, was merging with Fritz Von Erich's World Class Championship Wrestling. The USWA, at that time, you had a Texas branch. You had a Memphis branch. December 30th, 1989, Memphis, Tennessee, Mid-South Coliseum. You beat Jerry Lawler for the unified title. Talk to us about that night. Talk to us, like, who made the decision for you to go over that night? When did you find out? And just kind of walk us through that night, those emotions, and just what a big deal that was.
Okay. So the match was set, and I didn't know what was going on, but anyway, Well, I'm saying, well, you know, I'm going to work with him, you know, so let them put him over. Then, so, that night, and he came in with the finish, and he told me, the law told us, okay, we're going to, I'm gonna put you over tonight. I said, yeah, right. He said, no. Oh, yeah. And then he just laid it out. That's what we were going to do with him. My heart sitting about to jump out of my chest, you know. Damn, what? This is Jerry Lawler. You know, nobody beat him. And here I am, is what they would call guys like me back in those days, was jobbers. You know, yeah, I'm a jobber. Come on. I don't believe this. And then he told me what was going to take place and how it was going to take place. And so we did it. And I think it was a success.
Oh, yeah.
For me, anyway, you know. Everywhere I go, you know, people, guys that are higher up in the business than me, you know, want to praise me about, damn, man. You know, like last year, they was doing the Young Rock here, and Marty and a few guys that worked for the WWE was there, and, you know, every time they would see me, they would want to come over and sit and talk. Man, what was it like? How was it? Man, how did you do it? And so, to this day, Marty and I are still friends. I talk to him regularly now, you know, because of that match.
So we have an exclusive here on Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. We're gonna have some first hand accounts and some information. Lo and behold, what a small world, King. Willie and I have a really good buddy that actually had the pleasure of growing up beside you. His name is Daniel Evans.
Daniel Evans.
He lived out in like by Sacred Heart and Walls, and he lived next door to you at some point when he was growing around. He was, you know, around 10 years old or so. He shared with me some stories or whatever. He said he wanted to share some childhood memories of you know what it was like, you know, growing up beside you. He said the first thing he said. When you went in your house, you would let him come over to your house and come in. And when you walked in, you would have giant aquariums in your entryway, usually with catfish or something.
Yeah.
He also said, you had several Rottweilers. And the story was that your regiment consisted of wrestling with your Rottweilers in the yard. That was your training. And he also said his life flashed before him one day because your Rottweilers got out.
Yeah.
And the last sentiment he shared with me, he said that you had just beat Lawler for his crown, and he was so anxious for you to come home. You pulled up in your truck, and then you pulled the crown out of your bag, and he was, as a 10-year-old kid, he said he probably didn't act like he should, but he was highly disappointed. The crown you pulled out, he was like, man, where's the real crown? You're like, oh, that real crown's at the studio. This is just a travel crown.
Right. Yep.
So he wanted me to share those memories of growing up, you know, beside the great, you know, King Cobra and awesome, you know. He said overall you were, you know, a super, super nice guy and a great neighbor, and you know, that's just, he will forever remember, you know, his childhood, you know.
Core childhood memories for him.
Yes, core childhood memories at some point, living, you know, growing up beside, you know, King Cobra, seeing catfish in fish tanks, being chased out by Rottweilers, and being disappointed by the damn travel crown. There you have it.
Well, that's what you tell people back then. They say, hey, like when you have a belt, you know, I say, damn, I thought these belts this is a replica of the real one. The real one, you can't leave it around like that because people steal them or guys run off with them or whatever. So they give you a copy.
Ah, yes.
That should be advice for any, you know, any man giving a woman, like, you know, engagement or a wedding ring. But like, hey, this is what you walk around with. You know, you'll get the real one day. It's on the way. You know, no worries, babe. It's on the way.
Yep. Well, I just told them they kept the real one locked on the safe and key. I said, man, you know, those belts are worth $100,000. You can't just walk around with that in your bag. You get robbed and the thing be gone.
Right. Well, King Cobra, Mr. Jimmy, we cannot express our honor and gratitude, you know, for you coming and doing the show with us, and it's been such an honor.
Okay, let me tell you this before we go. Okay, the thing of with the wrestling part time and stuff. See, Me being shop manager, I just never took vacations and things unless that it meant something. You know, early on, I would take vacations and go to another city and install equipment for these people, for these companies that we did business with. And so that's how I made a lot of money doing that. And so I would take my vacation time to do it. I just never would take a vacation. Then something, I would take a vacation. If I took a vacation, it was like a three-day vacation. I'd leave on Thursday night and catch Friday and Saturday and come back Sunday and be at work on Monday. So my schedule was like that, and it helped me with wrestling also. You know, I wrestled in Hawaii. I wrestled in Puerto Rico. I even took tours of Japan wrestling.
Bahamas. I read where you've wrestled in the Bahamas before.
You're right. And so with doing that, you know, that made it look like I was just like one of the boys, but I wasn't. I was a boy by night and regular John Doe during the day. And that helped me be successful, because most people that you call jobbers didn't do nothing but get the job, never made it to a territory. Most of them never made a house match, you know. And I'm thankful for Rocky Johnson telling them to do that. And, you know, like a lot of people don't know it, you know, Dwayne, when Rocky would come to town, he would bring his wife, and me and my wife and Rocky and his wife would go out to dinner or something, and Dwayne would stay at the house and play with my kids, you know. So I've been knowing Dwayne since he was about 5 years old, you know.
Incredible, you know, stories. And we can't thank you enough, King Cobra, for doing that. You know, being on the show and being a guest, and it's been a tremendous honor, and we can't thank you enough, sir.
Okay, and I hope you wasn't disappointed.
No, not at all.
Absolutely not.
Matter of fact, as soon as we're done, we're gonna send you Bob Durden's phone number, if you don't mind.
Okay, do that.
I've been a big deal lately. I've got the pleasure of posting pictures on social media, having dinner with King Cobra. You know, I'm also, you know, doing good for myself right now. I'm in the company of King Cobra. It's an honor to meet you, honor to hang out with you, honor to have you as a guest. You're the man, King Cobra. You're the man, buddy.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you, Jimmy, so much. We appreciate you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
All right.